Beginning as Balducci's fruit stand in Greenwich Village 70 years ago, Baldor Specialty Foods has been curating and delivering the highest quality foods in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Chefs rely on Baldor for the freshest and most seasonal ingredients, along with new and exciting items that you just can't get elsewhere. Baldor's ordering process is designed with a chef's schedule and priorities in mind to get you what you need when you need it. Baldor is the trusted resource and partner for the region's top chefs. Learn what Baldor can do for your business today at baldorfood.com.
This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Claudia Wu.
And I'm Carrie Diamond.
And we're the founders of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. We'd like to thank our sponsors for making this season of Radio Cherry Bomb possible. Prince Street, the fresh new podcast with a culinary heart from Dean and DeLuca. Be sure to give it a listen. Baldor Specialty Foods, which curates and delivers the best and freshest food in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. And the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts, where you can start your journey to becoming a natural foods chef today.
We have a surprise guest to start off with on the phone right now. She is one of our favorite chefs, Nancy Silverton, the talent behind the Matza restaurants in Los Angeles. She's in New York City today to cook at tonight's Red Supper in downtown Manhattan. It's part of the 2016 Eat Red, Save Lives campaign, benefiting the Global Fund to Fight AIDS. Nancy is totally the bomb, and we love her. Nancy, are you there?
Wow, I'm here listening to all those wonderful words. Now I've got to live up to that.
Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
So how did you get involved in the Red Project?
Well, you know, it's a project that since its inception, Mario's always been a big part of. Mario Batali, my partner. I always think of him as the guy that doesn't need a last name. But for those of our listeners that don't know, Mario Batali is a partner of mine in my restaurants in Los Angeles, and this is a campaign that he has always been a part of. We have always celebrated by creating a red dish at our menu and a red dinner where we donate the proceeds to this the foundation.
So tonight is kind of like the big woo-ha dinner happening in New York. And what are you making tonight? What's on the menu?
Well, the way that it's formatted is I think that there are 500 guests, and
no pressure.
We're
not cooking for 500. I really love the way that it's formatted. So Anthony Bourdain is doing the pass around, and he's actually cooking for all 500. And then the rest of us that are doing this, we're cooking for 125 people only, and there's two chefs. So I'm paired with Tom Douglas, who's an old friend of mine, so I'm happy to be with him. And we are preparing a three-course meal. I'm doing the first two courses, and Tom is doing the last course. And then dessert is being done by one person also, so we don't have to include dessert in our meal. And I guess so that everybody sort of is eating our interpretation using certain ingredients that Mario picked out. So he asked for us to do a second course with using red peppers, and then a third course with Parmesan cheese, and then the main is with short ribs. So I'm doing tuna stuffed baby red peppers with a little celery salad and anchovies, and that will we're stuffing right now. I'm in a culinary school, by the way, which is a fantastic one downtown. And then I'm going to be doing a speck wrapped burrata with English peas and shaved Parmesan.
Sounds like an episode of Chopped.
Sounds,
and so my job right now is slicing mint. I'm having a very nice time slicing mint. You know, you never, when you have a restaurant, and you're sort of, and I have actually three on that quarter, some of the simple tasks I really miss that I don't do anymore, like slicing mints. I get to zone out and just practice my knife skills.
But I will say, I ate at Matzah a few months ago and really had such an extraordinary meal. My friend and I sat at, I think, what you call the mozzarella bar,
right,
where there's an open kitchen, and to my surprise, you were right there cooking.
As I should be.
Why do you still work the line when, you know, you could easily peace out and let other people do the hard work?
You know, I really feel in a restaurant, that's where my comfort zone is behind the counter, you know. So as far as being a restaurateur, I would much rather be there than, say, work in the dining room. You know, I'm not very comfortable chatting it up. But I am when I've got a knife in my hand and a cutting board in front of me. I feel so at home, and I feel like you're in my house, in my kitchen, and I get to talk to everybody behind the mozzarella bar. I love it.
Yeah, I imagine it must be very, like, meditative or, like, zen when you're just,
yes,
like, focused on a task. And we actually, in our new issue, we have a picture of you sprinkling salt over something, which I think Carrie also saw you do many, many times in L.A.
You do it with a lot of, you do it with a lot of flair, Nancy, like everything you do.
And style. We should talk about your fashion. Because, I don't know, I think you're probably one of the most fashionable chefs out there. You wear Prada and Marni and Celine. How did your love of fashion come about?
You know, as we were saying, I'm in the dining room behind the bar, so I'm, you know, sort of on stage. But the other thing is that I'm not cooking in a hot kitchen, and so I'm sort of able to wear street clothes and throw on an apron and cook. And I take my apron off and I go out, or I come in off the street and put my apron on and I get to work. And it just sort of worked out that way. And now it's a big, kind of big part of how I feel. You know, when I feel like I'm dressed well, I feel like I am well, and I feel like I cook well.
I can't ever imagine you in one of those awful chef's coats.
You know what, in my early days when we had to wear those, but I always felt like I was an imposter. It's like, what am I doing in this white button-down, probably in those days, polyester, you know, jacket? You know, I felt like I was always dressing up, you know?
Can we ask what you're wearing tonight? Do you know what you're going to wear tonight?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Do you know what you're going to wear tonight?
Yeah, right now I'm wearing exactly what I'm wearing prepping. So I'm wearing a Marni blue tunic dress and a striped button-down shirt underneath, my sandals, and a long Japanese apron that I really like a lot, linen apron that goes to my ankles.
Nancy, we're happy to take your hand-me-downs anytime.
Oh, good, because I really need to clean my carpet.
We can have a cherry bomb garage sale for charity or something.
Perfect.
We'll come hang out on your front yard.
Yep.
So not to totally put you on the spot, but can you leave us with one piece of Nancy Silverton wisdom?
Wow. Nothing like putting me on the spot, and it's not going to be wise.
First thing that comes to mind.
Wow. Sorry, I failed you.
No hand-me-down wisdom
wise
today.
you are wise.
That's my wisdom.
You are very wise, Nancy. Well, listen, we would absolutely love for you to come back on the show. I know this was like a super quick interview.
Anytime.
But you are a busy lady. But next time you're in New York, please come on the show, hang out with us in Bushwick. We would love to see you and give you some time to think about those tough questions.
Right.
We would love to ask you.
I'm coming back for that.
Okay, good.
So my wisdom, my little bit of wisdom is, don't give them everything they want because they won't ask you back. So,
that's
you
a good
go.
One. That's a good
That'll
one.
That'll be the first question.
Well, we definitely want you back in the fall.
Okay.
You can check out red.org, and I believe it's /eats, to learn about other Red events taking place this June across the country.
Thank you, Nancy. Have a great event tonight.
Thank you. I'm going back to my mint.
Bye-bye. So our next guest is Yvette Leeper Bueno, a lifelong resident of Harlem. In 2013, she opened Vinaturia, a restaurant and wine bar on Frederick Douglass Boulevard that's become a neighborhood hub. Yvette, a mother of two, is very much part of the current Harlem Renaissance, and she's here to tell us about her life, her path to the food biz, and more. Yvette Lieberbueno, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
We're very happy you're here, too. So let's get right into it. How did you wind up in the restaurant business?
Well, let's go back to my upbringing. I grew up on the Upper West Side, super Upper West Side kid. I have a very close-knit family, which is really just consists of my mother and my father. I'm an only child. I was a gymnast and a product of the public school system. My mother and father were really involved in the public school system. And I just always loved food. I always loved food. My mother had these amazing, amazing lunches that she would give me. And she's just an amazing, amazing cook. She's from Jamaica, and my father is from the South. And
that's a great combo.
It is an awesome, awesome combination.
Wait, we have to go back one step, but you said your mom made you these awesome lunches.
Yeah,
I brought peanut butter on Wonder Bread to school every day. So you need to tell us what these wonderful lunches were.
Oh, no. We had meatloaf. And I'm not just talking meatloaf. Wah. I'm talking meatloaf infused with garlic and herbs and yummy stuff. And she never forgot, like, to put chips in there and really delicious juice, and since she was Jamaican, there might be even some mango in there and something really tasty like that. Very thoughtful lunches.
No public school lunches for you.
No.
God, my lunch was so sad. Literally, Jif peanut butter. I hope my mom's not listening. Jif peanut butter, Wonder Bread, marshmallow fluff, and a Hostess treat. I don't think I ate a mango until I was in my 20s.
I demanded bologna and cheese sandwiches every day from my mom.
She used to leave notes, too, on the brown paper bags, like, pick you up after school, big hearts.
And, do you do that? Do you do that for your kids
now? I have carried over and done something like that to them, write them little notes. I realized how much I enjoyed it, and I continued to carry it forth. She was also a really big breakfast person. And she really always stressed the importance of, like, going out to school with a really nutritious breakfast. She used to make me grilled cheese sandwiches. That was my favorite thing in the world. And she also used to make me protein shakes. I mean,
wow,
this is way back, too. This is, like, and even had, like, protein powder and banana. She was, you know, I was a gymnast, so she wanted to send me off into the world and really fortify me.
So your mom was also a big influence on you career-wise.
Absolutely. We've always worked together. When I was 8 years old, she opened a children's clothing boutique on Broadway's Upper West Side, where we lived, on 103rd Street. And it turned into a 25-year foray into the fashion business. I remember when my parents signed the lease. The very next day, they were in the store painting and fixing it up and getting everything ready. And I just thought to myself, you know, there was no contractor back in those days. You took matters into your own hands and you fixed up things. My uncle came and he, like, made the rack system out of wood. I mean, everything was made by hand. And from those days, you really get the sense of hard work. And it's like just the importance of really working really hard at things.
How serious a gymnast were you?
I did it for a number of years. I did it for about 8 years. It was something I absolutely, absolutely loved. And along with the gymnastics tricks that I used to do, I was, you know, a snazzy dresser. So I was okay at school. You know, I had a good time.
So you followed in your mom's footsteps and got into the children's clothing business.
Absolutely. Yes. We opened up a store in Grand Central Terminal. And we had that for about almost 10 years. And of course, Grand Central Terminal is such a highly trafficked place and just came into contact with
people say it's like Grand Central. They mean it's like packed.
And I really can say that. Absolutely. And it's just a great foray into meeting people from all walks of life and understanding people. And even though Now in the restaurant business, I think a lot of the foundation of how to treat people and customer service and kind of going beyond and making you feel welcome when you come in and really comes from those times and working with my mom.
So how did you make the leap from the children's clothing business to being a restaurateur?
It's a huge leap, isn't it?
It's a big leap.
Well, I began living in Harlem around 13 years ago.
So you were not a lifelong resident of Harlem.
I was Upper West Side, close and neighboring neighborhood.
And then you went to Barnard, right?
I did go to Barnard.
So you're like...
High fives around the room. Yes, I did go to Barnard. But my parents decided in the 80s that they were going to purchase this piece of property on 112th Street in Harlem. And they took me to show me the place that they were considering purchasing. I could not believe it. I don't see this happening. You're going to lose your money. Don't do it. Abandoned, buildings everywhere. But fast forward, I've come to really eat my words, because where am I living? Where am I loving it? Where am I feeling more alive and anchored? That same building.
So you still live there now?
I live there. Oh. Yes, yes. I live there. It's renovated about 10 years ago at this point, and we did really modern structure.
Claudia, you would love Yvette's house. I saw it in Dwell, and I've seen it online.
Oh.
And it's really fab.
Oh, thank you so much.
I would imagine it doesn't look like anything for blocks. It's a pretty unique house.
Oh, thank you very much. The construction process was incredible. It took about 5 years to fully complete the project. The entire back facade is all sort of this fiberglass structure that had to be brought around from another block, implemented on long hoisted beams. Everyone was on pins and needles because we couldn't believe the structure was going to go up. But it definitely is modern, but it also remains true to the past because it's still anchored and encased in the brick that is still very indicative of brownstones.
So working with the contractors doing that construction, it must have been great experience when it came time to do Vinateria.
Absolutely. I really worked very, very, very closely with the contractors. And I think it represents a time in my life when I just gave it all I had. It was such an arduous process of every day working at it, running into problems with different red tapes in the Department of Buildings and just endless amounts of work. It definitely helped, but it wasn't just me. I mean, I got so much help along the way.
So tell us the aha moment when you decided, okay, I need to really complicate my life. I need to have a restaurant.
Well, it really also came out of my love of where I was living. I realized that a lot of people were going downtown constantly, and I really wanted to contribute something that would be a really welcoming, fun hub, and really add to the options that we had, which were limited at the time.
Mm-hmm. So walk us through the process. Like, did someone bring you an opportunity? Did you see a for sale sign or a for rent sign?
Well, a couple of deals fell through. This is an entire 2-year process. I met with a designer and I brought the ideas that we were interested in. She met with us, my husband and I, and so many questions were asked. I couldn't figure out why she had so many questions and who is going to be there and what do you perceive here? And I just thought it was sort of a little bit annoying, But I am so glad that she asked those early questions, because those early questions really came to formulate who we are as a restaurant. And I think if somebody doesn't ask the questions, you don't get to articulate the answers.
So why did you decide to go with the direction you went? It's very inspired by Italian and Spanish cuisines.
That is correct. My husband is from Argentina, and so I had a chance to live in Argentina for about 6 months, and I had a chance to study there, and I just soaked up the culture. I was able to speak Spanish every day, obviously. I was eating like a local, and I became really, really enthralled with pastas, and became really enthralled with Spanish food. And I think those were the first underpinnings of my real interest with the region. And, you know, while I was there, I thought, I don't really like guys here. But, of course, as soon as I came back, who did I meet? I met my husband in Jamaica, of all places. So,
oh, so you didn't meet him in Argentina?
I did not meet him in Argentina. I was at a wedding, and he was also vacationing there. And my mother played a dastardly joke on me. She essentially made it seem like they knew me. She gave them all the information, where I had lived, where what I had studied, who my professors were. And so I was sitting by the poolside reading a book, and these three gentlemen enter the area. Hola, Yvette, ¿cómo estás? Big kisses everywhere. And I said, do you remember me in Spanish? And I'm saying no. And the second one was like, but of course you remember me. No, but they knew so much about me. They knew where I studied. They knew everything. And so by the third person, but of course, te acuerdas de mí, you remember me. And I said, oh, yeah. And my mother's behind. My mother is behind the tree going, gotcha. What could I do? What could I do? All I could do is dive in the pool.
But so two grandchildren later, yeah. She probably doesn't regret it.
Two grandchildren later, yes. Yes.
So who's the cook in the family, you or your husband?
It's both. My husband is the asadero. He does all the things that are grilled and outside, and asados are sort of barbecues, and he's the one that does all that stuff. I'm the breakfast lady. I will get you an awesome breakfast. I love to make breakfast. It's the time where I spend the most with my children, and that's what gives me a lot of pleasure.
So we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Yvette more about the Harlem Renaissance, what her restaurant is all about, and who her role models are in this industry. We'll be right back. Were you into avocado toast before any of your friends? Do you know how to whip up some cashew cream? And do you make your own almond milk? If so, you're our kind of person, and you might be interested in the classes at the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts, located in the heart of Manhattan. Founded in 1977, NGI is the first culinary school dedicated to healthy cooking to be accredited nationally. Their professional chef's training program is offered full and part-time, and several of our favorite chefs are alumni, including Dirt Candy's Amanda Cohen, Alyssa Wagner of Dimes, and Chloe Coscarelli of By Chloe. Visit the NGI website to learn how you can transform your life and your career. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. We're here with Yvette Leeper Bueno, the owner of Vinateria. I want you to say that. You said it so nicely when I saw you outside.
You said it very nicely,
okay.
But Vinateria.
See, that's better. So you opened this restaurant back in 2013, and you have definitely been part of the current Harlem Renaissance that's taking place. Tell us a little bit about the neighborhood and the changes, some of which have been controversial, some of which have been very welcome. Where, just tell us from your perspective what's going on.
Well, Harlem is a really exciting and very comfortable place to be right now. I mean, it is absolutely home. Home in the sense that I walk the streets, I know a lot of people, we speak on the streets. It's a very hospitable and homey place to be. And what's happening right now in Harlem, and especially in terms of the culinary scene, is it's really just it's exploding. There are so many new chefs coming to the area. A lot of new restaurants have opened up, and it's becoming a real hub of socialization and restaurant culture. And I think Venetaria is definitely part of that movement.
Do you worry about the gentrification that's taking place and old-time residents leaving, some being forced out?
Well, fortunately, since I have such deep roots in Harlem, I have access to people that have been in the area 40 years. And I think for most of them that I have spoken to, they notice that the streets are cleaner, the neighborhoods are safer, they're brighter, services are more readily available. And these are the things that really impact people's lives. And I think those are the changes that everyone can, it resonates with everyone and everyone can enjoy.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the interesting things about the Harlem food scene is it's a very diverse food scene. And that's sort of one thing lacking from the food scene overall today. You know, it's a very white scene. If you really know the food world, you know that it is diverse, you know, from the mom and pop restaurants to the people working front of house and back of house. But for whatever reason, the people who've become famous don't reflect the diversity. So I was just curious, who have your role models been in terms of, since you're more or less a new restaurateur, you know, who have you looked to for advice, for how to do things?
Well, I think it's really interesting because a lot of people are looking at Harlem because of what's so fresh and new that's happening there. We'll get a lot of customers that come to us from the 70s, 80s, and 90s on the west side, or where things have maybe gotten a little bit less sort of innovation happening, and they're looking to us and tasting things here, and we're really giving them a reason to come up and try new things, because there are restaurants like the Cecil, for example, that's doing their own cuisine, which is this African diaspora cuisine. I just recently realized that they're doing something with eating with your hands and roti, and it's its own cuisine. It's unique. These are not experiences that you can have elsewhere. And I think that's one of the reasons why people are looking to the area, is because it's fresh, it's new, it's got a lot of allure. There's a really great wealth of offering right now.
So what's your day-to-day role with the restaurant? Tell us what you do.
I am behind the scenes troubleshooting. I am doing the books, paying all the bills. I am negotiating with people for different, better rates on things. And I'm in the restaurant on several nights till very late. And what I love to do is to greet people and welcome them to the restaurant and just make them feel welcomed and at ease. And that's the role that I love most to do, is meeting new people, and it's very much akin to the things that I've already done in terms of my children's clothing store. It's always been like, you know, coming into my living room, come on, let's chat. It's very relaxed, and I think those are the things that I really like to do.
Restaurants are kind of notorious for their poor long hours. And I know, being a mom of two, you must have, you know, worked out some sort of life-work balance. How is it being a mom and owning a restaurant?
It's wonderful being a mom, and it's wonderful being a restaurateur. It is challenging doing both at the same time, but you got to realize that this is not a one-man endeavor. It never is in the restaurant business. And I have so many support systems. I have my husband, who is wonderful, who will come from work and do things. My dad is amazing. He drives my kids to soccer. He does an amazing amount of work. My mom is also in the restaurant. She's part of that sort of umbrella of warmth as you come in. She's also part of greeting people. She loves to connect people, and she makes connections with people very easily. You know, it's about the team. It's really, really about the team. For me, that is just about our greatest accomplishment, is the people that we work with and how much of a give and take and a familial style we have.
Do your kids ever help out in the restaurant? How old are they?
Yeah. 17 and 13.
Oh, so they're old enough.
Yeah, they're old enough.
You can recruit them.
Yes, yes.
Get those working papers.
I just last night heard my son go into the kitchen and say, "See you guys this summer." So let it be known that he's going to come into the kitchen and help out.
Does he want to cook?
I think he's into cooking. He's into eating. So, yeah, he's interested.
And how about your daughter?
I don't have a daughter. I have two sons.
Oh, you have two sons. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, the 13-year-old, yeah, we're going to give him some inventory to do. I got some serious counting work to be done. So I see him in the horizon counting.
But that's a good age. Do you have many? I own some restaurants in Brooklyn, and one of the things that shocked me is how few high school kids come in to ask for jobs. Because I remember when I was a kid growing up in New York, you know, you never thought about not having a summer job. And I remember my parents saying, "Okay, go find a job. Don't come home until you find a job." And you would just walk into every store and ask about a job. And then you found one, and that was your summer job. You know, whatever menial task, you know, the local stores are willing to give you. Do you have kids come in these days and ask for jobs?
Not as much. You're absolutely right. That seems to be something that's a little bit devoid. But anybody that wants to, there we are to, and we love to teach, and we love to invest in people, and we love it when they take their skill set and do other things in life and bigger and better. So that's part of the role of what we do when we're there. We want you to learn and soak up as much as you can.
So what's next?
What's next? Well, this restaurant is definitely keeping me quite busy, but we opened up our sidewalk cafe recently. Folks are enjoying that now that the weather is beautiful. It's a great time to come up and sip rosé and have awesome handmade pastas on our patio. And just what's next is more of this good thing and more of this good feeling.
Well, summer's always an exciting time, so...
Absolutely.
We're looking forward to it. We're all looking forward to taking some time off. But, yeah, we'll have to come up to Harlem soon and visit you guys.
Do that. Yeah.
Rosé on the sidewalk sounds amazing.
Absolutely.
Dining al fresco. It's summer in New York.
Absolutely.
All right, so we're going to do a speed round with you now. Super easy questions. We're not going to stump you like Nancy, hopefully. Coffee or tea?
I'm going to say neither. I'm going to say yerba mate. Yerba mate from Argentina is a wonderful start to the morning. It's got a little bit of caffeine. It's an herb, and it'll get you going. It's great.
What's in your refrigerator right now?
Not as many marinating wonderful things as my mother's kitchen was when I was growing up. I come from the type of family where there's always something marinating, and I'll open the fridge and I don't get that wonderful smell anymore. What's in my kitchen? I think we have some pizza that I made.
How do you like your eggs?
I just like them fried. I'm not a really hard sell with that. You know, just fry it up, break the yolk, easy going.
What's the one thing you'd never eat?
eyes.
I'm with you.
Okay, cool.
Their fish eyes are a delicacy.
I know.
What's your favorite kitchen tool?
I like the whisk because you can control it. You can, you know, if you have a blender, that's all great, but nothing like whisking. It's, you know, it gets you revved up. It's great.
What's your go-to snack?
Oh, it's boring, but nuts and raisins.
If you
we'll let you pass on that one.
If you were a food or beverage, what would you be and why?
I'd be your lemonade that I got in the store. It's perfect.
Oh,
it's,
next door, Roberta's
yeah,
to go.
Roberta's to go. What an awesome, awesome, perfectly tart, perfectly sweet. I'd be that. Oh, yeah. That's feeling good.
Worst job you've ever had?
I've actually never really, really worked for anybody other than our own business. So I guess it would have to be something I created, I have to say.
Where do you want to travel to next?
I want to go back to Italy. I'd like to go to the region of Lecce, and there's a cooking school in particular called the Awaiting Table that I'd love to go visit.
Ooh,
sounds good.
That sounds nice.
We've been talking about that for a while.
Yeah, we're dying. We're dying to go.
We're
big talkers. One of these days, somebody's going to have to call us out. We're just going to have to enroll in a culinary school. We talk about, I mean, I know they're one of our sponsors, but we talk seriously about signing up for Natural Gourmet Institute. So maybe this fall, Claudia.
Yes,
we'll get our acts together and finally do what we keep saying we're going to do.
Sounds cool.
Yvette, thank you. I know it's not easy to get to Bushwick from Harlem. So
thank you so much for bringing me out here. It's wonderful. I had such a great time. Beautiful outdoor space that you have there.
I hope you stick around and eat.
I absolutely will.
Yeah, you have to have some pizza.
Oh, and I've heard the sticky buns are off the hook.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm so in.
My favorite thing here is not on the menu. It's a pizza pie called the Bee Sting, and it's honey, and it's spicy honey. It's really, really good. So if you stick around, you might want to try that. If you're listening and you live in New York City or you plan to visit New York City, you need to get your butt up to Harlem and go visit Yvette. And like she said, come sit outside, eat some homemade pasta, drink some rosé, and hang out at Vinateria. And we hope to see you up there really soon. Thank you, Yvette.
Thank you so much.
We will be right back with the latest installment of Mimi Sheraton's 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die.
Today's episode is brought to you by Prince Street, Dean and DeLuca's monthly podcast dedicated to the delicious and infinite connections between people and food. Each new Prince Street podcast features special guests, field reports, and meals from around the world. Editor-in-Chief Howie Kahn hosts the show, featuring segments from correspondents such as Griffin Dunn, Jay McInerney, Eden Grinchpan, and Sierra Tischgart. Download Prince Street on iTunes and online at livefromprincestreet.com. Prince Street, a fresh new podcast with a culinary heart.
Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton. I'm the author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die. Here's one to get you started. Pizzoccheri. The toasty, grainy specialty of the high alpine region of Altalena remained a well-kept secret until it recently began to appear on the menus of some fashionable restaurants here. Pizzoccheri, the name for both the rustic sand beige pasta and the luxuriously creamy dish made with it, is based on flour ground from buckwheat, in Italian, grano di saraceno, or Saracen grain, a pretty exotic name. Technically not a grain, buckwheat is a grass and boasts a nicely gritty texture and a delicious nutty flavor, along with a high content of the essential amino acid lysine. Because it is heavy and absorbent, it is combined in this case with the lighter wheat flour to make a pasta dough more suitable for saucing. rolled out and cut into narrow fettuccine-like strands. The pizzoccheri is tossed with diced potatoes and shredded Swiss chard or Savoy cabbage. Well-drained pasta and vegetables are put into a casserole that has been rubbed with a cut clove of garlic, then layered with ruby dicings of red onions, silver-green leaves of sage, sweet butter, the region's special white, soft-melting Bito cheese, which is something like a dry fontina, and sprinklings of grated Parmesan. Heated for a few minutes, the pizzoccheri emerges in a luscious steaming mass, given a crackling contrast by the fruity, bright Sassella wine of the same region.
Thank you, Mimi. Be sure to pick up Mimi's book, A Thousand Foods to Eat Before You Die, at your favorite indie bookstore.
Don't you love Mimi?
Oh, yeah.
I want to come back in my next life as Mimi Sheraton. Mm-hmm. What a life she's had, eating everywhere and traveling everywhere. Well, we lied. Yvette is still with us. We mm-hmm. made her stay in the studio with us to talk just a little bit more. As you were leaving, you said you wanted to talk about one last thing.
I just wanted to thank folks that may have come out to Harlem Eat Up, which is a four-day food festival that just transpired last weekend. And it is an amazing, amazing event. It's the brainchild of Chef Marcus Samuelson and Herb Carletz, who does these amazing, amazing food shows. This food festival was not just about food. It actually brought together the best talent in Harlem. There was food, there was shows, there was all kinds of dancing, acting, really, really, really great festival. I just wanted to give a shout out, thank all those that came to Venetaria for our dine-in dinner, which happened on Friday, and to thank Chef Alex Stupak for coming out.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. So, you know what, you'll have to come back next year in advance.
Yeah, in advance.
Talk about it.
And talk about it, because next year I can only imagine it'll be every year it gets bigger and better. And really, really wonderful time.
That would be a blast to go to. I'm sure all our listeners who are in the area would love to check it out next year. So thank you again, Yvette.
Thank you
so
much for having me.
Have a wonderful summer. And thank you to our sponsors for supporting Radio Cherry Bomb, Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts. Start your journey to become a natural food chef today by visiting ngihca.edu.
Prince Street, a fresh podcast with a culinary heart. For more, visit livefromprincestreet.com or download the Prince Street podcast from iTunes.
Baldor Specialty Foods curates and delivers the best and freshest food in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Learn what Baldor can do for your business today at baldorfood.com.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
You're the bomb.
I'm Molly Tavolini. I work for CNN's morning show New Day, and I'm a lifestyle and food photographer and writer in New York City. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Alia Lee Kong. She's a Brooklyn-based chef, author, and TV personality who's leading the way on exotic flavors. Not to mention, she's gorgeous, hilarious, and has whipped up some of the best dishes I've ever had. She's the bomb.